progress, but no deal to raise the U.S. debt ceiling, with time running out to resolve the standoff.
With the nation now a week away from when the Treasury Department says it may run out of cash to pay debts, both sides say there are still serious differences.
Plus, a lack of medicine is becoming another deadly impact of the growing refugee crisis due to the ongoing violence in Sudan.
Really, the fighting has to stop, otherwise one catastrophe after the other in different or various fields of medicine will ensue.
And a small company with big plans for an upcoming mission to put an uncrewed lander on the moon. Today is Friday, May 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. With time running out for a deal that would avert an unprecedented U.S. default on its debt, top White House officials and Republican lawmakers reportedly were making progress Thursday evening on an agreement that would raise the debt limit for 2 years while also limiting federal spending on all but military and veterans. If Congress fails to raise the borrowing limit, it could send the global economy into chaos. More from Associated Press correspondent Sagar Magani in Washington.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he's told his negotiators to stay here in Washington and work 24/7 with White House counterparts.
They're working on numbers, we're working on numbers, and we'll work together.
With the nation now a week away from when the Treasury Department says it may run out of cash to pay debts, both sides say there are still serious differences. Republicans are demanding spending cuts, Democrats oppose.
It's about competing visions for America.
President Biden says the talks center on the budget, not a default, which he insists both sides have ruled out. He says the only way forward is a bipartisan deal both chambers of Congress can pass. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Highlighting the concerns, Fitch Ratings Agency placed the United States' AAA credit on rating watch negative, warning of a possible downgrade. Ukraine said Thursday it had shot down all 36 Iranian-made drones launched by Russia in overnight attacks it said were probably aimed at critical infrastructure and military facilities. President Volodymyr Zelensky said it had been an uneasy night but commended the work of air defenses. Meanwhile, the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, made up of military leaders from about 50 nations, met Thursday to discuss what Kyiv needs to do to counter Russian invaders, along with plans for Ukrainians to train on and acquire F-16 fighter jets. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin hosted the virtual meeting from the Pentagon. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has details.
As Russia's invasion of Ukraine enters its 16th month, Western military leaders vowed more support for Ukraine was on the way, promising more munitions for Ukraine's ground-based air defenses and a new plan to train Ukraine on F-16 fighter jets, an expensive international effort that will be led by Denmark and the Netherlands. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
This costs money, and not every country has F-16s or is able to chime in terms of training or maintenance and sustainment, but they can provide monetary assistance.
The top U.S. military officer, General Mark Milley, tried to temper expectations amid the excitement surrounding the F-16 announcement.
There are no magic weapons. An F-16 is not, neither is anything else. 10 F-16s is $1 billion. You add the sustainment cost, another $1 billion. So you're talking about $2 billion for 10 aircraft. The Russians have 1,000. Fourth and fifth generation fighters.
In total, the Ukraine Defense Contact Group has committed about $65 billion in security assistance for Ukraine since the start of the war. And officials made clear they want those weapons to change the dynamics on the battlefield, not to attack Russian territory. The top U.S. military officer, General Mark Milley.
We have asked the Ukrainians not to use U.S.-supplied equipment for direct attacks into Russia. Why is that? Because we don't want, this is a Ukrainian war. It is not a war between the United States and Russia. It's not a war between NATO and Russia.
Russian officials have said F-16s would raise the question of NATO involvement and the risk of nuclear apocalypse. It also said a cross-border raid into Russian territory this week used U.S.-supplied weapons, a claim the Pentagon says it is looking into. Anti-Kremlin Russian paramilitary groups claimed responsibility, and Ukraine has denied involvement in the attacks. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Sporadic clashes between Sudan's army and a powerful paramilitary force continued Thursday, puncturing the relative calm in the capital, Khartoum, and raising the risk that a week-long truce would crumble. The 5 weeks of warfare in Khartoum and outbursts of violence in other parts of Sudan, including the western region of Darfur, have destroyed hospitals and medical care in the country, and patients who fled the conflict are desperate for treatment. In the absence of medical aid, a Sudanese pharmacist who fled Sudan is doing what he can to help other refugees at a camp in neighboring Chad. Henry Wilkins reports from Kufrone, Chad.
A month ago, Mohammed Adam gathered what medicine he could when he heard the Janjaweed, an armed group known for killing civilians, was about to storm his hometown of Tindelti in West Darfur. He says he loaded the medicine on a horse-drawn cart and rode the kilometre or so across the border to neighbouring Chad. Since then, he has set up a makeshift pharmacy in Kufrun, a refugee site where about 10,000 people live.
Mostly now we need help with items for children because they are getting sick with infections, diarrhea, coughing, and especially there are problems with measles. It's mostly children who are our patients.
He says he pays for the medicine his patients receive himself. Medina Ahmed Ishak has just arrived at the pharmacy seeking treatment for her baby, Abdul Razak.
My child is sick with malaria and has diarrhea. Any food we had to eat is gone, so now I don't have enough. I pray that my son becomes a doctor one day.
Since Sudan's conflict began on April 15th, Chad and aid groups have struggled to provide enough food for refugees to eat. Medical aid is scarce too, according to refugees. Inside Sudan, the healthcare system has all but collapsed. This video purports to show a hospital in Khartoum gutted by the fighting. Others in the city are said to have been severely damaged, along with hospitals in West Darfur, where much fighting has taken place. The medical non-profit Doctors Without Borders said Tuesday that its medical facilities had been looted, while a staff member had already been killed in April in the fighting. It says the looting will have life-ending consequences for the Sudanese people. Amir Eltom is the Assistant Secretary General of the Sudanese American Physicians Association. He says with the Sudanese government not functioning because of the fighting, his organization is helping fund the running of some hospitals. A week-long ceasefire that began Monday should allow some medical aid to enter the country.
Some of the hospitals that have been shut down for various reasons are the largest in Sudan. Some of the tertiary hospitals that other states referred to. Basically, the fighting has to stop. Otherwise, one catastrophe after the other in different or various fields of medicine will ensue.
Adam says refugees need more help from the international community, however.
First, I ask all nonprofits and local communities to help the refugees because they really need it. They have no place to protect them from rain, which helps spread diseases. We are concerned about the spread of cholera, which could turn into an epidemic. It will be a catastrophe.
He says he's doing what he can with what little he has. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kufrun, Chad.
Greek authorities have been caught on film apparently forcing asylum seekers into a life raft and abandoning them at sea. Human rights groups have long accused Athens of such practices. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, Greece denies carrying out so-called pushbacks and says it has launched an investigation into the video.
The video, published this week by the New York Times, purports to show a group of migrants taken to the shoreline of the Greek island of Lesbos on April 11th in an unmarked white van. The group of 12 includes several small children. They are led by masked men to an inflatable boat, then taken to a Greek Coast Guard vessel offshore, which then sails further away from the coastline. The migrants are seemingly forced into an inflatable life raft and abandoned in the middle of the Aegean Sea. They were reportedly picked up by the Turkish Coast Guard an hour later. The footage, which has not been independently verified by VOA, was filmed by Fayyad Muller of the Austrian political organisation Der Wandel, who has spent several years documenting the treatment of migrants landing on Greek shores. He says he has witnessed many such pushbacks.
On average, it's every second day that the Turkish Coast Guard finds a life raft somewhere at the Aegean borders between Turkey and Greece. This is going on for 3 years. This is a major operation by the Greek state. So I had the idea, or the only solution was to get a video of these crimes and to publish it.
The Greek government denies conducting pushbacks, despite widespread evidence to the contrary. In January, VOA reported on the death of Turkish migrant Barış Buyuksu. Ankara says he died after being tortured on the Greek island of Kos and forced into a dinghy that was pushed back into Turkish waters. Athens denied any knowledge or responsibility.
We see the breaking of so multiple laws, crimes in Greece, like kidnapping, taking the freedom away from people, refusal of giving the people a fair asylum procedure, deporting them, and then, of course, the breaking of law on international as well as European level.
The New York Times says it tracked the migrants to a detention facility in the Turkish city of Izmir and said it verified the events depicted in the video. Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis reacted, describing the video as a completely unacceptable practice, but insisted his government's migrant policy was tough but fair. Mitsotakis has called on the European Union to offer more help over migration. Analysts say there is little sign of any agreement.
Burden sharing is a question for many governments in the European Union, but I think they have resigned themselves in a way to the fact that they will not find a common solution, at least in the short term. And what's happening at the moment, in my view, is that this means that it's every country for themselves.
The European Union has called on Greece to open an independent inquiry. Critics say the EU is already fully aware of what is happening on its southern shores. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
We're following these other stories from around the world. One of the most wanted suspects in Rwanda's genocide, a police officer suspected of orchestrating the killing of more than 2,000 people at a church nearly three decades ago, has been arrested in South Africa after 22 years on the run. A special tribunal set up by the United Nations to find the perpetrators says the suspect had assumed a false identity. State media reports Iran successfully test-launched a ballistic missile with a potential 2,000-kilometer range on Thursday, just 2 days after Israel's armed forces chief raised the prospect of action against Tehran over its nuclear program. Iran says its weapons are capable of reaching the U.S. and Israeli bases in the region. Turkish voters will cast ballots in the country's first presidential runoff election on Sunday. Incumbent President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is the front runner after narrowly missing an outright win in the first round, but analysts say his challenger has an outside chance if he can galvanize his voting base. This is VOA News.
VOA Science Beat. A recent study using genome data from modern-day African populations is shedding light on the emergence and dispersal of Homo sapiens. The research suggests multiple ancestral groups across Africa contributed to the development of Homo sapiens, migrating and intermixing over hundreds of thousands of years. The study found all present-day humans can trace their ancestry back to at least two distinct populations in Africa, dating back approximately 1 million years. Contrary to previous hypotheses, the findings indicate that our species did not evolve in a single location or in isolation. The research relied on genome data from 290 individuals, mainly from four genetically diverse African populations, and also included data from Europeans and a Neanderthal. Due to the scarcity of fossil remains, genetic information provides valuable insights into our evolutionary past and population interconnections. I'm VOA's Steve Miller.
The VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. A young Ugandan man orphaned at childhood dreams of playing U.S. Major League Baseball and has turned his training into a social media sensation. 18-year-old Dennis Kasumba, who earns a living by cleaning cow sheds, can't afford professional equipment, so he uses old tires and oil drums filled with water to train. And last week, Kasumba got news that will bring him one step closer to his dream, as Halima Athumani reports from Wakiso District, Uganda.
Opportunity often comes to those who are prepared, and Ugandan baseball player Dennis Kasumba, who grew up as an orphan, lives up to this adage. Training three times a day, Kasumba, who has become a social media sensation among baseball fans, has created his own gym, improvising with everything that can make him a better and stronger player. Kasumba recalls one of his videos that went viral, earning him a spot on the U.S. television show SportsCenter. I had my phone pinging and wondered what was going on. Little did I know my video had been played on the biggest television stations in America. He says, as I was walking to the field, colleagues called me out saying, SportsCenter was relaying your video. Have you watched it? I told them, my family doesn't own a television set. He is starting to see his efforts pay off. Kasumba has received an invitation to play with a U.S. team, the Frederick Keys, in the state of Maryland in an amateur league over the summer season starting June 1st. He is already building an American fan base. One of the people who was impressed by Kasumba's videos is baseball fan and lawyer Joshua William from Atlanta in the U.S. state of Georgia, who spoke to VOA via Zoom.
My sons play travel baseball, and we were traveling for a tournament down in Florida, and I was just scrolling through my phone, and I saw one of Kasumba's videos and was just like, wow, this kid is really good. And so I just kind of reached out to him through Facebook, and we started talking, and he started telling me his dreams of, you know, how he wants to play baseball professionally.
Since then, William has been working hard for Kasumba to get a U.S. visa so he can travel to play in the MLB Draft League. Back home, Sempa John Bosco, a baseball coach, says he's worked with Kasumba for a couple of years despite big challenges.
Baseball equipment are scarce in the country. We just get them through donations from friends who see what we do, and they provide this equipment to us. So when it comes to gym work, it is expensive for us to go to gym. You have to pay a lot of money. So we have to improvise just like you see Kasumba.
Uganda is home to only two baseball fields, including one donated by Japan and American donors. After having three U.S. visa applications denied, on Thursday, Lady Luck finally smiled upon Kasumba, who got the visa. He can now prepare to leave Uganda to play in the U.S. over the summer and work toward his goal of being a professional baseball player. Halima Athmani for VA News, Wakiso, Uganda.
A small company devoted to low-cost space launch systems will take part in an upcoming mission to put an uncrewed lander on the moon. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, it's one of many small companies taking part in NASA's Artemis program.
Workers at Scorpius Space Launch Company make a carbon fiber panel for a fuel tank. Something like the tank that will take the Nova C IM-1 lander to the moon's surface as early as June of this year. The small Torrance, California-based company is keeping down costs for a scientific venture that will run experiments on the moon, providing a tough, lightweight fuel tank that resists extremely low temperatures. Scorpius President and CEO Marcus Rufer.
It uses liquid methane and liquid oxygen to create the propulsion, as opposed to some of the very highly toxic liquids that we use traditionally.
The Nova C lander is designed by a Texas company called Intuitive Machines, and the data it collects will support the International Artemis program led by the U.S. space agency NASA that will return humans to the moon as early as 2025, for the first time since 1972. Near the south pole of the moon, the lander will conduct experiments that will help future human crews extract resources from the lunar soil, for example. Engineers and technicians at Scorpius rely on ingenuity, not big research budgets. Chris Maruyama is manager of composite operations at Scorpius.
Because we are small and nimble, we were able to produce the tanks that they needed in the time frame and the cost required.
For small companies, such missions are a challenge. Scorpius President Marcus Ruffer.
Going to space, of course, is a very difficult endeavor. And naturally kind of favors large organizations and companies that have the means to mitigate risks, have access to all the technologies, to all the labs, to all the testing. So for a small team like us, that's rather unusual.
James Wirtz is the president of Microcosm, Scorpius' parent company. He's also an author and adjunct professor at the University of Southern California. He tells students,
there's a big universe out there, and there's a chance to explore, and you are the very first people that are going to have a chance to explore it.
There will be excitement here when the mission gets off the ground and lands, says Ruffer.
We're very proud that we made it to this point, and obviously we're on pins and needles to see, you know, when this rocket takes off. There'll be a lot of jumping up and down for sure.
As humans enter a new age of exploration, and nations and private companies make plans to cooperate and compete in space. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Fans continue to pay tribute to Tina Turner, the singer and performer who survived an abusive marriage to triumph in middle age with the chart-topping What's Love Got to Do with It? Mike Ravissa is a fan in Los Angeles who visited Turner's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which is now adorned with flowers and other mementos.
You know what she went through, which I didn't like, but she fought. She fought her way through.
Turner died Wednesday at her home in Switzerland after a long illness. She was 83. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire team, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Rashad Hussein, outlined several key findings from this year's International Religious Freedom Report. First, far too many governments continue to freely target faith community members within their borders, said Ambassador Rashad.
Russia, a country of particular concern for the second year in a row, continues to target faith communities within its borders and beyond. Brave people of faith in Russia who dare to speak against its brutal roar against Ukraine are targeted for repression. The People's Republic of China seized, imprisoned, and banished predominantly Muslim Uyghurs to re-education camps. They continued their oppression of Tibetan Buddhists, Chinese Christians, and Falun Gong practitioners.
In Afghanistan, members of communities that do not adhere to the Taliban's narrow theology must hide their religious identity or flee for their lives. In Saudi Arabia, there have been recent moves to increase interfaith dialogue and religious tolerance, but publicly practicing any faith other than Islam remains illegal. A second theme in the report is the increase of government restrictions on access to holy sites and places of worship, said Ambassador Rashad.
We have all seen the sad pictures of Ukraine's civilians sifting through the rubble of their beautiful and historic churches, destroyed by Russia's brutal war of aggression. Uyghurs have witnessed the PRC government destroy or repurpose their mosques or cemeteries. Authorities also destroy the monasteries of Tibetan Buddhists and expelled monks and nuns.
Third, many countries continue to legislate and enforce apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, noted Ambassador Rashad.
These laws are direct attacks on the right to freedom of religion or belief. They criminalize religious expression and justify discrimination and harassment against members of minority religious groups or others who do not conform with the dictates of the approved theology.
Fourth, the report shines a light on the need for governments to ensure equal access to primary services such as education. In Afghanistan, the Taliban, in the name of religion, continues to rob women and girls of this fundamental right. Religion can be such a powerful force for good in the world. Societies who seek to restrict it or use it to harm others cannot achieve their full potential, warned Ambassador Hussein. We vow to redouble our efforts to ensure greater respect for freedom of religion or belief for everyone, everywhere.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.